Media Network from Hilversum's top international wireless station.
Hello, I'm Diana Janssen.
I'm Jonathan Marks.
Welcome to a special media network focusing on digital audio broadcasting. We've had quite a few letters in the last few weeks asking what's going on, and I note some interesting debates on the internet.
We've also had incoming phone calls that comment on the fact that it's some time since we've done an update. But first, news in brief and to a mystery.
Hello, this is Herman Content in Ghent, Belgium. Can you tell me more about a radio station transmitting on 3,905 kilohertz calling Radio Barriquita? It's non-stop Latin American music.
We checked. It turns out that Radio Barriquita is a pirate radio station broadcasting from Verona in Italy. We noted them at 2030 UTC on 3925 kilohertz instead of 3905. But of course, pirate stations tend to move up and down the dial all the time. To something more serious, nearly 3 years ago, a Japanese religious group called Shinriko appeared on the international radio dial.
In April of 1992, they started with 2 hours of Japanese programs, hiring 1 hour of shortwave and 1 hour of medium wave over the facilities of Radio Moscow. On June 15th in that same year, 2 half-hour English programs started. The founder of this religious order was, and still is, Shoko Asahara, and the general offices turned out to be in Fujinomiya City, and that's in central Japan. The broadcast ended with a commercial.
The teaching Master Asahara expounds is the same teaching Buddha Shakyamuni gave 2,500 years ago. The teachings of the truth now on sale.
42 frequencies were coupled to carry the message of the Gospel of the Holy Heaven, presented by Mr. Asahara himself.
All of you will remember to practice the teaching of truth and to make the best use of this program to attain...
Now this religious group is in the news for a completely different reason. Last Monday morning, during the rush hour, travelers in the Tokyo subway were poisoned by a lethal nerve gas called sarin.
At least 10 people have died so far. More than 5,000 were injured. Some reports suggest there may be a connection between this terrorist act and the Buddhist sect Shinriko, the people behind the shortwave and medium wave broadcasts. The sect was founded in 1987 by Mr. Asahara. At the moment, they're claiming over tens of thousands of followers worldwide. They've denied involvement in the gas incident. Chris Greenway of BBC Monitoring in the UK takes up the story.
Their transmissions in English, we have been observing them to continue since the events of Monday of this week. They're broadcasting twice a day via transmitters in the former Soviet Union. They're on the air at 0430 GMT and 2030. Immediately prior to their broadcasts are used by the Voice of Russia World Service. I don't know if there's too much point in me reading out shortwave frequencies this week because, of course, we've got coming up this weekend the introduction of a new summer broadcasting schedule, so the frequencies will probably change this coming weekend if indeed the station is still on the air then. But it's interesting for people in Europe, it's also broadcast on medium wave. The 0430 broadcast is on 1386 kilohertz, coming from the transmitter site near Kaliningrad. And then in the evening, the 2030 broadcast is on 1494 kilohertz medium wave, and that's from a transmitter near St. Petersburg.
More languages are involved because the group has Japanese broadcasts from 15 to 18 hours UTC on 1476 kilohertz from a transmitter near Vladivostok. There have also been Russian language broadcasts on the domestic Russian radio network and on a Moscow television station called 2x2.
However, we had a report which we picked up earlier this year that these broadcasts in Russian had in fact been halted, and they were the subject of a lawsuit in a Moscow court with Shinriko trying to get themselves back on the air, but the authorities claiming that the organization was not properly registered. Broadcasts in Russian appear now to have been ceased.
The programs in English originate from a DAT recorder in central Moscow, which feeds into the Russian transmitter network. They're obviously recorded in advance. The Japanese transmissions, though, are live via satellite from Japan.
Obviously, if the Japanese authorities do move against this organization, then we would perhaps first notice that by these live broadcasts going off the air, because obviously there may be a certain amount of tapes of the English broadcast sort of in the pipeline, as it were, and those might carry on for a while.
From Asia back to Europe, Radio Austria International will join the World Radio Network as from April the 1st for 30 minutes in English to Europe and also to North America. Times will be announced shortly.
We've got the world talking. Radio Netherlands.
As we speak, industry and government officials are meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, to discuss the future of digital audio broadcasting, DAB, in Europe and further afield. For FM has not lived up to the original expectations as an interference-free medium. When it was set up back in the 1950s, it assumed that the listener would put up an external antenna. Mobile reception in cars came much later, with all the problems of so-called multipath fading. That sounds a bit like this, as the direct and indirect signals bounce off buildings in the city and arrive at the antenna at different times, cancelling each other out.
We know from the experience with a compact disc that recording music and speech digitally gives better overall results than the old analog black gramophone record. People have been looking at ways to improve FM radio to give nearly equal results as the compact disc sound. At the same time, radio spectrum space is limited. Radio stations are springing up all over the place, and the interference levels are rising much the same way as they did on shortwave in the 1980s.
The NOZEMA is the Netherlands Broadcasting Transmission Company. The headquarters are in Lopik, just outside Utrecht, in the centre of the Netherlands. Part of the building, where a huge medium-wave transmitter used to stand, has been converted into offices, dealing with much more efficient technology. Jan Duven is the technical advisor on DAB at the NOZEMA. He explains that, in a nutshell, the European version of DAB, the so-called Eureka 147 standard, is a bit like a container ship. In the old days, you could go down to the docks and hand in a parcel any old size. Now you can only deliver a standard size container.
That's the same thing with DAB. We have a kind of container, a container containing bits. The container has to be full. Once it is not full, well, you can either send away a container which is not completely full, but that's, of course, less efficient.
You can fill the inside of the ship with all types of cargo. It could be a stereo radio service for classical music, or it could be two mono-speech networks like this one. Or it could be a radio service plus some data with a sort of radio teletext like you see on television with weather and travel information displayed on the panel of the radio. Once the container is full, then the ship heads to its destination.
The advantage is that one ship, or in this case one frequency, carries a lot of information, a lot of choice, and everyone enjoys perfect reception. Over the years, through compression technology like Musicam, engineers have been able to squeeze more radio into a smaller space.
It started, in fact, with 7 megahertz. Then we went to 3.5, and at the end it was about 1.5. It's a kind of compromise. If you don't have enough programs, perhaps you can improve the quality. Or another thing is try to use the extra capacity for data casting or whatever.
You have been doing experiments for the last year, I think. You have transmitters in Haarlem, a transmitter at the tower near Radio Netherlands in Hilversum. You have a transmitter in Rotterdam. What are the results so far?
In the first place, that we have some experience with DAB, with the equipment. For instance, one of the first things we learned is that the receiver we have had quite a lot of radiation, so we had to build a copper case around it. And of course, there came complaints about that.
Digital transmissions broke into the rather poorly shielded cable system in Haarlem. And as a result, the frequency of the test was moved to around 220 megahertz, so-called television channel 12.
The Rotterdam and Haarlem transmitter have a radiated power of 1 kilowatt, and the one in Hilversum is a small one that's only 100 watts.
That's not much if you compare it to FM.
No. Our main stations in FM have a radiated power of 100 kilowatt, and for the DAB network, we think of stations of 1 or 2 kilowatt. And then we have, of course, more programs. In FM, you transmit one program per transmitter, so one program on 100 kilowatt. And in DAB, we have 6 programs, or even more, on 1 or 2 kilowatts.
That means that DAB is much cheaper than FM and far more cheaper than AM.
That's true. The broadcaster will pay much less for a DAB network than for an FM and AM network.
But while Europeans are testing Eureka 147, which operates on a new set of frequencies, groups in the United States are trying to put digital transmissions onto existing AM and FM frequencies in such a way that listeners with conventional radios will notice until they buy a new radio. This compatible approach, called in-band on-channel, or IBOC, will be demonstrated in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks. But it could mean that digital traveler radios of the future will have to have two systems built in. So taking a television analogy, it's the NTSC and PAL problem all over again.
Well, yes, if you want to receive your programs in Europe and also in the US with the same receiver, you need two receivers, that is true. But the question is if that is really a disadvantage. Are there so many people traveling across the ocean with their receivers? I don't know, perhaps it may. But it is what you say, the broadcasting landscape is quite different in the United States. On the other hand, in Canada, they are thinking much along the same lines as we do.
Shortwave may be crackly, but it works all over the world. The Europeans clearly don't like the in-band on-channel approach.
There's also a technical reason, as far as we know, and that is that the IBOC system cannot be used in the existing FM networks in Europe. The networks in Europe are planned much more densely. The frequency space between the transmissions is much smaller, and therefore we believe that the IBOC system cannot be used in the European situation.
There's already a push from national broadcasters to switch to DAB. But will a radio station serving a small town, let's say in the eastern part of the Netherlands, really want to use digital audio broadcasting?
Well, it depends. I believe that in particular the larger towns, they certainly will use DAB. I don't see any reason why not. If also the smaller towns and villages will have DAB, that's a question. In Europe, in general, the idea is that these kind of transmissions, so the small local and community transmissions, will remain on FM for a very, very long time.
Just as DAB has become a hot topic in Geneva, Holland is expanding AM and FM. Sky Radio and Radio 538 were two stations who failed to get commercial licenses last year. Now the authorities in The Hague say they may reconsider. And Hit Holland FM on 1224 kHz, broadcasting from a ship on the IJsselmeer, will increase its power to the maximum of 50 kilowatts. Will DAB then put an end to medium wave?
Well, that's a difficult question, because in particular in the Netherlands, medium wave is quite popular at the moment. We built recently a number of new stations, but that's mainly because there are not enough FM frequencies. I believe that once DAB is there and once there are enough DAB receivers, there's probably not much reason to continue AM transmissions. But for a large number of years to come, I believe that AM will still be there.
And where will it start? Will it start in cars or will it start at home?
It will start in cars. The first receivers that will come onto the market are car receivers, because the industry believes that the advantages for mobile reception are the best opportunity. A portable receiver is a bit more difficult, because there are some problems to overcome on the battery side. DAB is very complicated. It requires a lot of electronic circuitry. It all requires a lot of power. And there's a lot of research in that field, and it's expected that in a couple of years we'll have a new type of battery which can cover that. But it's a bit more difficult.
But for now, no DAB radio on the beach yet.
It's the time of the season for love.
There won't be much playing around this summer. Officials will have to make decisions as to whether DAB will be slotted into the radio spectrum. The idea is that we could get frequencies around 216 or 230 megahertz, but actually anything could happen.
First of all, we need frequencies. There's a planning meeting, a DAB planning meeting in Wiesbaden in July, and we hope to get our frequencies there. Then the new covenant policy is that there could be more than one DAB operator, so it's not for sure that Nosema will operate DAB. But of course, it's our intention to do so. If everything goes well, we hope to start somewhere at the end of 96, beginning of 97, with a network covering the western part of the Netherlands. And after that, we will extend that gradually in the coming years.
The Nozema is currently testing DAB under mobile conditions. The laboratory receiver has been mounted in the trunk and coupled to a standard FM radio. As you drive along, you can compare FM, including multipath problems, with crystal clear DAB. But during a demonstration for Media Network, I noticed that when you move out of the service area of the transmitter, the receiver starts to mute. And that annoying problem still has to be worked on.
Naturally, the people running terrestrial transmitter networks believe in terrestrial DAB. But other people are hoping that DAB will come from transponders on board geostationary satellites. WorldSpace is a group based in Washington, D.C., USA. They've been talking about DAB services for Africa for some time now. Earlier this year, they got significant industrial backing from the French company Alcatel, based in Toulouse.
Jean-François Gambard is the Director of International Business Development at the Communications Satellite Division.
Effectively, on the 21st of January, we've signed a contract with WorldSpace. And this contract is twofold. We'll be the space segment provider, manufacturing the satellite system and the ground system, as well as we'll be a strategic investors into WorldSpace with a significant amount of equity. Alcatel has decided to put $12 million in the equity of WorldSpace. That's the first part. The second part of our space segment provider's investment will be another $12 million by Alenia Spazio of Italy.
So you're going to build the satellites. What sort of satellites are they going to be like? We know, for example, about the Astra satellites here in Europe. Are you going to build the African equivalent of Astra?
Oh, it's not comparable to any type of communication satellite existing today. It's a satellite for digital radio broadcasting with a new technology on board, with an onboard processor, in order to be very flexible and to accommodate the needs of the broadcasters.
And what about the receivers? Because, I mean, are these going to be expensive? You talk about digital receivers. The digital sets available in Europe are quite expensive.
Yeah, the one which are planned by WorldSpace, they are under development by Motorola in the US. And the cost of the receiver, the initial cost to be put on the market, is in the range of $100, which is much less than the one we've seen in Europe.
Alcatel's interest, then, is purely in building the satellites?
Alcatel will build a satellite system, will take full responsibility of delivering the satellites in orbit, the three satellites, as well as to operate the system for the entire lifetime. That's our first interest. There is another interest of the Alcatel-Alstom group is maybe to take some capacity on board of the satellites, because the group has some interest in radios in France. We are one of the shareholders of Radio Nostalgie, which is an FM-type radio with subsidiaries in Russia and in Africa. And it's under consideration by the group to maybe lease some capacity also for our programming.
So you can get your programming from Paris, let's say, to certain parts of Africa?
Yes.
Why do you start in Africa and not, for example, in Asia, where the media is exploding there too?
Because of, the French language. We have radios in Africa, but there are also diversification possible in Asia. It's under consideration also.
When will we see the receivers and the satellites being built? I mean, is it in a few years' time or when?
Yeah, that's 3 years' time. The start of operation will be beginning of 98 for the first satellite. And each satellite system, there will be three satellites covering three regions or three continents. And each satellite will be launched at 6 months' interval. That means end of 98, the system will be fully operational worldwide.
So it doesn't matter where I am. If I'm in the jungles of South America, I'll have the same access to the same radio?
Yes.
By which time, of course, you expect then that shortwave will no longer be needed?
No, there will be a transition phase. The shortwave programming or the shortwave transmission will exist for maybe 15, 20 years and 25 years, while at the same time, digital technology will improve the quality of reception to the audience, and there will be a transition.
And from Motorola's side, then they're developing what, the chips for the radios?
Yes, Motorola is currently developing the chips of those radios which are called Starman. And the chips will be then sold or licensed to other manufacturers to be integrated in multi-band radios.
And what about the frequency spectrum? Is that all sorted out?
The frequency spectrum has been allocated by a WAR conference, say, World Administrative Radio Conference in 92, which we are using L-band, which is 1.5 gigahertz, which is the radio frequency which is to be used by this type of system.
And what radio stations are interested in taking part so far, apart from, of course, Radio Netherlands?
Oh, Radio Netherlands is one of the first customers of WorldSpace, and we are very, say, WorldSpace is very grateful to that. VOA is one of the customers, and also some others in domestic radios like Radio Kenya, Radio Zimbabwe, Radio Korea, and a group in India. Also, some organization like UNESCO and World Health Organization are very much interested by the service. When there are disasters, say emergency services can use this system worldwide.
One final question. You're putting a lot of effort into radio, but isn't the future television?
There is a need for radio broadcasting in a large part of the world. The system that WorldSpace wants to operate is targeting a population of 4 billion people in, say, deep Africa or deep Asia, deep South America. Say they don't have any television yet. So, and for the next maybe 20 years, so say radios will be one of the, say, best tool for reaching the people.
Towards 2000 with Media Network here on Radio Netherlands.
And so did that conference in Geneva, with the title Eurodab, designed to create an umbrella platform to get DAB going as fast as possible. Bert Steinkamp works for Radio Netherlands, but is in Geneva today as the EBU coordinator for the Experts Group on International Broadcasting.
People have reasoned, and I think quite correctly, that where we are dealing with a medium which can cover entire continents quite easily, it looks a bit out of tune to have the organizations working purely on a national basis. What happened yesterday was that out of the nearly 200 people present, only five or six said that they would have to clear joining within their own organizations because of the hierarchy in it. But all others raised their hands, and so one can say that there is now a very firm commitment to a Eurodab platform from broadcasters, industry regulators, the EBU itself, obviously, the network providers. It was in the building of the ITU, indicating also the link with that body. And the European Union was represented as well by, in code language, DG10, which deals with media policy, and the other Directorate General, which has to do with broadcasting, which is DG13, which is for industrial development.
What does that mean, though? I mean, where do they go from here? They've agreed that they should all coordinate. Does that mean to say that things have been accepted, like Europe is taking the stand that Eureka 147 is the standard and not the IBOC that's being tested in North America?
Well, but the first thing about this new Euro platform, I think, is saving a lot of time. For Europe, it's crystal clear that where the ITU has now accepted that Eureka 147 is an accepted worldwide standard, that the digression from that here in Europe will be minimal, if at all existent. It doesn't say much for the rest of the world. I must say that yesterday, however, we also had representations from Canada, the United States. Others will join, hopefully later, like countries like India and Japan. So the question of standards will remain, certainly for international broadcasters. One of the biggest proponents of a different world system, of course, has been WorldSpace, in conjunction, first of all, with Motorola, and in conjunction since early this year, with Alcatel, They, incidentally, were also present yesterday in the meeting, people from World Space. But that, I think, is a nut to crack in many more meetings, but not necessarily of this Eurodab platform, because for Europe, the road ahead in that sense is very clear. It will be Eureka 147.
But what about receivers? When are we going to see them on the market? People have been talking about maybe a couple of years.
It was interesting to hear what I think is a news flash, that those who represented industry yesterday committed themselves to have sets on the market on the Funkausstellung, the radio and television exhibition, in Berlin in 1997 at a price under 1,000 Deutschmarks, say under 500 US. And I think that is a very clear sign of commitment on the part of the industry, also helping us in breaking the chicken and egg cycle, which is always there in technological developments in broadcasting. The broadcasters waiting for the industry and industry waiting for the broadcasters.
Is there going to be a north-south divide, though, where you see DAB starting up much earlier, let's say, in Scandinavia and northwest Europe, like in the Netherlands, and much later in places like Italy and Spain?
I don't think so, because a lot of time was devoted yesterday to taking a full tour of the horizon of development in each of the countries. And you can see that in a country like Italy, test transmissions are already going on. For totally unconnected political reasons, state political reasons in Italy, not everything is very sure at the moment. Rai, apparently, in conjunction with commercial broadcasters in Italy, is certainly on the way to development. The United Kingdom, of course, will start its first round of service covering 20% of the population in September this year, but that's not news, I would say. Most other countries are claiming that they will be running a regular DAB service in the year 1997 or before.
Weekend. A BBC, Deutsche Welle, Radio France International and Radio Netherlands co-production.
Meanwhile, international broadcasters are experimenting with both DAB hardware and software. After some pilot programmes hidden away early Sunday morning on the BBC, the first European digital radio production will get wider coverage on Deutsche Welle and Radio Netherlands as from March the 26th. Maggie Eyre, who produces material for European digital radio on behalf of Radio Netherlands, believes that programme makers will have to make something different if they're to stimulate the DAB market.
Looking at a subject, for instance, in the different countries that are involved in the project, you can take any number of cultural issues and compare them in different countries and then get a really good European sound. I think also you have to bear in mind, you know, what are the listeners going to gain from a co-production like this? I don't think at the moment it necessarily matters that it's a co-production. They're hearing a European programme, but it could be coming from London or from Paris or from Cologne.
But you listen to the World Radio Network on the Amsterdam cable. It's a selection of international broadcasters that you can listen to in studio quality. Very similar, I suppose, to DAB of the future. But what's wrong with international broadcasting at the moment?
Well, I think as far as it goes, it's doing a very good job, but it's missing out on one very important, vital group, and that is young people. And young people are moving around, travelling around more than ever before, and they are consistently not catered for in terms of any international programming.
Après quelques salles vides, aujourd'hui l'heure de leur tournée justement, on refuse même du monde. C'est Dire Straits avec Money for Nothing.
If you tune across the FM dial in Paris, you'll find Radio France International as an outlet on 89 MHz. Less well known is that they've been broadcasting using DAB for the last 12 months. Eric Baptiste is RFI's Director General. He maintains, though, that people will not buy DAB radios unless the programmes are exciting.
People don't know anything about what's going on in other European countries. We know more what's going on in America or in Japan or in other countries than we know about what's going on in Germany, in the Netherlands or in England. And that's what we should concentrate on.
So what about the DAB experiment?
Yeah, we started a year ago on an experimental basis in Paris only. 10 programs are broadcast in DAB in Paris. Luckily, RFI is one of the 10 programs, and I think it's a great advantage for us among the international broadcasters community. We're, to my knowledge, we're the only one who has that privilege. One of the preoccupations that we have is to find space for international broadcasters on the DAB spectrum, whether it is via satellite or terrestrial DAB. But our existence, our future depends on the success of having some DAB space.
Is there going to be that much pressure, though, on DAB to start with, bearing in mind that you've got a nice receiver in your office, but very few other people have?
Well, when you say nice, it's quite kind of ironic. It's a piece that could come out of a laboratory. It's a second-generation prototype. I believe that international broadcasters can broaden the choice for all persons in the Netherlands, in France. If we had the BBC, if we had Radio Netherlands, if we had everything like that on DAB, it would be a good reason to buy a DAB receiver.
Radio Netherlands, where great minds drink alike. Sorry, think alike.
And now over to Melbourne, Australia, where Mike Bird is waiting with the propagation review.
Diana, conditions were fair to good. Solar activity was low all week. The solar flux ranged between 81 and 92. The average works out to 86.1, which equals an effective sunspot number of 29, and that is up on the previous week's level of 17. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 14 and 5, which represents unsettled to quiet conditions. So there we are, Diana. Considering everything, it wasn't a bad week.
And what about between now and next week?
Well, I think we're in for a mixed week next week. IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should be quiet to unsettled until Sunday, when we expect a coronal hole will produce unsettled to active conditions with minor storm periods. And these conditions should last until Wednesday the 29th.
Thanks, Mike.
And that's all for this edition of the programme. From Diana and myself,
we wish you a pleasant weekend.